Keith is a senior geotechnical engineer at Freeport-McMoRan and the Corporate Geomechanics Group in Oro Valley, Arizona. He earned his Bachelor of Science in Mining Engineering from the University of Arizona in 2006, and Keith works on projects related to slope stability at Freeport. How about a warm welcome for Keith?
Thanks, Steve. See if I can figure this thing out. Okay. So, like Steve said, I'm a geotechnical engineer. And if any of you work with people like me, you usually probably deal with us on these kinds of things, looking at slope monitoring and radars and all sorts of instrumentation. We might be out there putting up cones and flagging and berms, barricading off part of the pit or a roadway, or just generally getting in the way with things like horizontal drills or other equipment, just making a nuisance. But there's some other value that we try to work on, and that's improving how we're mining and blasting and constructing the pit walls, because there's some value to be gained there for the company. If the pit walls are cleaner and steeper, we can get away with a similar size catch bench and steepen the high wall. That allows us to gain ore in the wall and maybe even go deeper. If it's a final wall that's just adding ore that wouldn't have been added, you may be able to optimize stripping and reduce how much stripping is required. Or maybe it just brings pounds and ore forward from what would be a future pushback. So there's some economic value there, but also just making the benches safer, cleaner, and a better place to work under. So this concept of slope steepening, slope optimization, it's not a new thing. It's been going on for 50 years. Pits and properties all over the world. It's not even a new thing for Freeport. There's been some good recent examples from conferences I've attended at Cripple Creek and Boddington of really taking advantage of what the rock mass can do and steepening up to a really crazy angle, some 55, 60 degrees. But they're doing it safely and they're doing it well. So what's different this time for Freeport? Well, this whole initiative for us started from the top down. It started with the president of North America Mining, Red Conger, with all the support of the executive team. And we're trying to do this initiative, this process, at every site, every operating site in the company. So that's been a big push that we've been doing for the last year and a half or so. We've committed everywhere to implementing all those wall control blasting techniques that we've all known about, but just generally find too cumbersome to really put forth the effort to do. And I'll show you some of those. We're getting much better feedback with our LiDAR scanners than we ever have before. So it's we'll go into a little bit of detail about what that gives us, but it's high density point clouds, survey points everywhere we want. We can get to inaccessible areas, unsafe areas, and have a really repeatable and clear measurement of how we're achieving the bench. And lastly, this isn't a project, not a one-time thing. Oh. this isn't a project. It's a process. We're trying to build this into how we do our mining every day. So to optimize your slope, to have a chance at steepening, there's a few things you need to consider. One is having a really good foundation in the geology and the geotechnical information on the rock mass. You have to know what the opportunities are as far as where can you optimize and steepen, and also what the limitations are, so you don't make a problem where there didn't used to be one. Hydrogeology is a really important aspect of it too. You have to know what the pore pressure is and what the slope can handle and manage that part. And that is a whole separate area of this that we're trying to optimize as well. There needs to be a clear economic evaluation. There's some things that can be done for little or no cost, just some effort and coordination, but there's some things that require a lot of investment. If you're gonna do that, it better be worth it. But the quickest and easiest way to see some value, at least from what we've seen so far, is by focusing on blasting, really optimizing the wall control blasting part, and how we're mining that. And that's what we're going to go into a little more detail today on. So we'll touch on most of these areas. For the wall control blasting, that's really the key part that what we're focusing on. But designing and planning the blast, before you even lay out the bench, before you even start the next bench, you're starting to design the blasts. The patterns themselves need to be well prepared, and that starts on the production patterns before you even get to a final wall or trim shot. Monitoring the blasts is critical to understand how they're performing and how your designs are performing. QAQC on what we did afterwards, the vibrations, and how we achieved on drilling and loading accuracy. And finally, and this is the most important part for the process to work, is reconciliation. How did we achieve that excavated final wall face? Because that's what we're trying to optimize. That's what we're changing our blast patterns to achieve, and that's what we're going to try to take advantage of any steepening potential that might be there. So the first step, before you even start a bench, is to do a blast master plan. That's what we've started doing at all of our properties. And you lay out every blast pattern for the whole bench. And you start this, let's see, along the wall. These are your final wall, your trim shot patterns. And you base everything else off of making sure those are well-designed and well-shaped. The other benefit to this is it can make sure you don't have weird shape patterns like this. This can cause issues, and by planning everything out in advance, you can hopefully avoid having to do that. Now, these pattern shapes you might make months before you actually shoot them, and they probably won't be exactly what you shoot, but it provides a good baseline. So when you adjust things, add a row here, take off a row there, by the end, it still mostly looks like this. And you can then take that to your short-range plan and see where your shovel progress needs to be, coordinate between the planners and the blasters and the operations to make sure you achieve your short-range forecasts while also leaving all of your final trim shots to get a better, better wall control improvement out of it, and keeping track of where you mined and what the next shot is. So this Blastmaster plan has been proven really important. We get everyone involved. Every group, department sits in a room. We go over the map and see how we're going to progress. So each blast pattern needs to be consistently designed, well thought out. When you do your trim burden, your burden and spacing, hole depths, everything needs to be with this idea of wall control in mind. So you're thinking not just of the bench that you're mining on, this space here, but you're also looking at the bench below the one you're mining on, making sure that you're not doing sub-drill into the next crest and blowing it off before you even get a chance to do it right. The other part of consistent blast design is documenting it, knowing what you did for every single blast, what the design was, eventually we get to what the actual was, what the loading was, so you can tie those results, so we can tie those results to what the final wall was, and hopefully make changes to improve it. Frequency control timing, that's a specific way to, that we develop our timing using what's called a signature hole. We blast one hole off by itself, monitor that with our seismographs, and then simulate that timing, simulate the best timing to have the highest frequency we can get, and hopefully a particle velocity, a vibration level that's not too high. So that's what's shown on the left here is the simulation for this specific shot and pattern. And on the right is the actual. Now, the numbers are way too small. But if you wanted to come up and look at them, they're exactly the same. We predicted 25 hertz on all three channels. We got 25 hertz on all three channels. And the PPV was within what we were looking for. So doing the frequency control timing is really critical. And as an example of that, this is one of our properties. We're going to get to the slope monitoring part now. What I'm showing here outlined in red is a big area that we started to see moving with our satellite-based radars. So we're using satellites to monitor ground movement. It works a lot like the ground-based radar, same basic principle. And we turned on this particular view back last year in June 2016 and immediately saw this big area moving. Our ground-based radar showed a similar result once we dove into it a little bit. It wasn't moving very fast, on the order of a few centimeters per year, but it was accelerating, and it's a very large area. Just for scale, each of these benches is 100 feet. So this was an important thing we needed to focus on, and the first thing we checked was how are we doing on our blasting. So we plotted out a few benches worth of blasts and what the dominant frequencies were for each one. There's no specific target for what the frequency is supposed to be, but generally we try to look for numbers that are 15 hertz or higher. And anything less than 15 hertz, that's worth looking at. Here we've got a lot of 8 hertz, 15 hertz. These are really low values, so these are really shaking the wall hard. And we saw similar things on other benches. So the first step was implement this frequency control timing and make sure that we've got the best one that we can get. We were able to find a few timing configurations that worked. So this chart's pretty busy, but one thing to focus on here is this blue line. That's plotting the dominant frequency, that same value we saw in the blast before. So these are blasts that have a frequency 8 to 10 hertz. Up here, it's about 25 hertz. So this is about where we made the change. And after that, all of these lines are slope movement. After that, all those lines stop going up, which means they stop moving. Now, the correlation's not exact because we had a low frequency blast here and it kind of moved a little bit more. But we haven't had any low frequency blasts since. This is for all of 2016. And we haven't seen any movement. So while there may be some other factors that played into why this area stopped moving, the blasting was the one thing we changed and it stopped moving. So we're pretty happy with that. So even just by October, the area that we're seeing with the radar decreased by quite a bit, and this means it's slowing down, and it's, in fact, slowed down even further after we finish this. There we go. So blast relief is one of the wall control recommendations that we've gotten from our blasting and slope stability consultants every time we ask them to come out. They come out to the site, they look at everything we're doing, might have some recommendations for timing or drill spacing, but the one thing they say is if you don't do blast relief right, you're not, all this other stuff doesn't matter. And even when we tried to do blast relief, get rid of the shot muck in front of the final wall pattern, usually ended up something like this. So that looks like a pretty well relief shot, but it's angle of repose all the way to the top. And when we did a scan of this with our LiDAR scanner, this is what the cross-section looked like. So our target here, 35 feet at the toe, which is pretty aggressive. This is about a 65-degree slope that we're trying to get on the trim shot out in front. It was actually angle of repose, about 80 feet. And this is pretty typical for what we were seeing. So the way to tackle this is by focusing on the production pattern before the trim shot. The answer has been different at every site, but generally it involves some combination of downloading the last row or two, adding air decks, or even standing off 5, 10, 20 feet, more than what we normally would between the first production row on the trim and the last production row on the production pattern. And by doing this and iterating, you know, one at a time, we do 5 feet on this one, 10 feet on the next one, eventually we were able to get to a really good result. So this is from one of our properties. Up here, this is the final wall face. This is the bench. That's the front of the trim shot. And from this picture, and if we had a better one from up close, they look the same. This looks like a final wall. Maybe a not great final wall, but that's really what we're going for. And it wasn't that hard to achieve. It didn't create high fragmentation. It was not much worse than mining at the final wall in terms of how we were able to produce that. So this is a slightly different view. This is the as-built scan from the LiDAR scanner compared to the relief design, what we're trying to achieve before we do these last two trim shots. And this is from the picture we just saw one slide ago. This is right at the toe. Here's the crest. Red is underdug, so there's some material at the toe that needs to be mined out here. Not much, really. There's a bunch here that needs to be taken out before we get to this next shot. But a lot of it is green, and green is within 2 feet of what our design is. So we're plus or minus 2 feet from a 65-degree trim shot face here, which when we started this, no one thought we could do. Internally, we went to all the properties and said, we're going to try to do this, and no one expected to be able to do it. And now most of our sites are getting something like this. Another aspect that's important is videotaping the blast. We video every single shot, and that's important just for knowing how the shot went off. Also trying to see where backbreak occurred and how the damage progressed through the shot. And one thing we've seen is that the normal way we do it with the camcorder is fine, but a better way to do it, this is a blast from the same exact shot, but this is from a drone taken above the shot. The quality's better, it's actually more stable from the drone, and we're able to get the exact angle that we want so we don't have dust in the way and all sorts of other issues. So this has been something we're working on. We're working with our blasting vendor to come out, and they film the shots for us with their drone, and we're working on getting an aerial vehicle at every site with pilots and all of the FCC work, FAA work that we need to do to get that done. So as we're drilling the shot and loading it, we want to make sure that our depth, our all of the aspects of the drill hole and the loading meet our design. Because if we're not doing what we say we're going to do, then changes don't mean anything. We have to base what we're changing on what we actually did. So every shot we do the depth deviation, stemming variation, do an XY plot of deviation of the collar, and then also look at the loading density. So this is kilograms per meter, pounds of explosive, or kilograms of explosive per meter of hole loaded. That allows us to see if we're hitting what our target should be based on the design. Clearly there was some issue here, and maybe the truck was not calibrated, maybe the driver doing the taping needs to work on his technique. Maybe some other issue happened, but it points us to something to look at for variation in our shot results. Last thing is reconciling it. So this is again from our LiDAR scanner, taking that face scan and built it into cross sections for this one pattern, and then laid it over the design that's in red. The black line is just an average of the green lines for how we achieved the design, and then we show the shots for this double bench right on top of it. And this allows us to see if we're losing crest, why might that be? In this case, it might be from the pattern above, or maybe there was just some flat geology, some flat structures here that caused this issue. If we're getting a hard toe, we can evaluate what we're loading here, what our energy factors are in this area, how close they are to the toe, and make changes that way. So this has been a very valuable tool. And this is the report card. This is how we did. Each one of these is a measurement of the catch bench width on 3-foot spacings for three benches, just in this one area of the pit. Our target, this is in meters, our target is 10.6 meters or 35 feet for a double bench. And green is good, yellow is okay, red is bad. So here we have a lot of improvement to do. We can also take all of these measurements and do statistics, compare them to our geotechnical design, and have a really good idea of if we achieved what our consultants say we can achieve. And we're actually trying to improve on that in most cases. So one thing I haven't mentioned yet is pre-splits. This can be a big part of how you do wall control, but it has to be economically justified. It's one of the things that adds cost immediately, drills and shovels and time to get these pre-splits done. You have to do them properly. It takes some work to figure out what the right spacing and loading is, and what even the right angle of the pre-split hole is. But when done properly, they can have a really big impact. Without pre-splits, there's seems like there's some kind of upper limit that we're seeing, maybe 70, 72 degrees on the bench face angle. It's about as steep as we've been able to, get, and most of the time it's less than that. But where we pre-split and pre-split well, we're getting 75, 80 degrees, maybe even a little bit steeper, and that allows us to really optimize the slope angles here. And it actually produces a much cleaner bench, much tighter rock, much less likely to produce rockfall. But you need to do it properly. And we need to do it properly. The trim shots before that, and even the production shots, if they're not following all of the wall control processes, they can blow right past the pre-split. So in this case, this whole wall was pre-split. You can see a couple half barrels here, but the trim shot in front of it had way too much energy and not enough relief, and it completely destroyed all the work on the pre-split. So getting all those other things in line has been our first goal before diving into this kind of detail at most of the properties. So this is a little bit more detail from the LiDAR scanner. This is a surface that was produced from one of the scans at one of the properties. This tool has been really what allowed us to do this whole thing, because it allows us to measure very clearly, very consistently, what this width is, what this angle is, where the crest and toe are in space. It's more reliable and consistent than when we've had surveyors, you know, walk the crest. Even where they're allowed to walk the crest, they have to estimate 10 feet away from the crest, and that's, you know, they're pretty good. They can estimate within a few feet. Here we're getting it to within half a foot or better. There's tools that allow us to compare the surface, like we saw the one with the color difference. And it just gets better, more consistent, reliable data. So after we've done all the shot, we've done all of our wall control blasting as well as we can, the next step is wall control mining. And this means everyone from the GM through all the supervisors to the shovel runner need to understand what the goal is, what we're trying to achieve, and how we're going to go about doing that. And what we found, this is where the communication part comes in, is that when we've talked to every person along the step, clearly we're asking the GM if we can do this, and by the time we get to the shovel runner, we're telling him what we're trying to do, but we're engaging all these everyone in the group in the process, so we're all trying to work as a team to try to achieve this thing. One thing a lot of our sites learned is that the shovel runners know what they're doing. They know a lot about how the rock is. They see it more than anybody else. So they've been able to give us really good feedback, which is not really surprising if you think about it, but sometimes you have to learn it the hard way. They've been able to give us feedback on how we're doing the relief, on what kinds of things they're seeing on the final wall, in terms of where it's breaking back, where the hard toe is. When they clean out the crest, is it crumbly and loose because we overshot it, or does it come down as a big slab because it's being controlled by structure? So those kinds of little things that they're paying attention to, when we get the right communication and feedback, it really helps us optimize this process. We want to use the right tool for the job. We've got some examples of that. And really what we're trying to do is build a safer bench. In order to do any kind of slope steepening, we need to make sure that the rock fall potential is low, that the catch capacity is high, and that we can do this thing safely. So before we even get the shovel in there, most of our sites are doing some kind of trenching, either with a dozer like this along the final wall, or with a track hoe or an excavator. This operator is particularly good. He managed to leave all those stakes standing. And this effort, either with the track hoe or the dozer, has proven to be pretty good. A lot of the shovel runners really like the direct visual feedback of where the crest is. As they get close, you can still see the flags, but you can also see this flat, mostly flat, clear crest, and it helps them control how they're mining that. So once it's mined out, if there's still some loose rocks, we'll run a dozer with a chain. It's a 50-foot chain with an anchor at the bottom, just a boat anchor, and try to knock off as many loose rocks as possible. This can take back a little bit of the crest. We lose a little bit of catch bench capacity, but we're knocking off the rocks that are most likely to fall. So I think that's a net positive in most cases. Another way to do it is with this long reach excavator. This is a 15-meter, 50-foot bench that we're looking at here. And take a lot of control here with the berm or doing it from off the side or even building up a pad for the excavator to get on. But the long reach boom allows them to stay at a safe distance while still reaching the crest. And this has proven to be pretty effective at getting specific loose rocks that we're seeing, especially where we can't get the dozer up on the bench. Another way to do it, this is back to our laser scanner, or LiDAR scanner. Down here is a surface comparison. In this case, red means there's at least 3 feet of underdig. In this case, there's a whole bunch of underdig because we haven't even gotten close to the finals yet. But what we're using this for is to set references for cross sections on how much needs to be dug, and putting that in our shovel control system so the operator knows when he's at section one, that's right here, and that's what section one looks like. Hope you can see that. It's a little bit thin, but it gives the as-built surface compared to the design that we're trying to go to and how much cut there is at the crest, in the middle, and close to the toe. So these are kind of like our cut marks, but we're doing them digitally. We're using the shovel control, and we've got it for the entire face. And this has allowed us to really dial in trying to achieve this bench design. So then the final shot, in this case, again, green is good. It's plus or minus 3 feet. There's a couple areas of overdig. That's probably some kind of structure, given how uniform it is. But it's generally on design. So that was a good result. So this process of slope optimization, you can add value from steepening. We can add value from steepening if we can achieve these bench designs. But no matter what, we're going to have better, safer benches. Needs to have a clear understanding of the geology, the geotechnical limitations, blasting and mining improvements. These wall control improvements can have a significant return on value. We didn't even talk about the hydrogeological things you can do with pumping and drains and other depressurization efforts. Everyone needs to be on the same page. We've got to make sure every supervisor, every planning engineer knows what we're trying to accomplish and is working towards it. Technology like the LiDAR scanner is really what allows us to do it and get a clear, consistent measurement of the face. And the whole process is just continuous reconciliation, collecting data on every single aspect of it, seeing how that compared to the result, providing that feedback back to the group, and continuing on to the next shot. Any questions?
Good morning, Tom Bobo from Split Engineering. Just curious, on the final wall stuff, when you changed the parameters, what was the effect on from production blasting to the trim blast in terms of fragmentation, differentiation, and how do you measure that?
So we have our shovel cameras that measure size distribution at all the faces, and we get that report back to a fragmentation engineer or control, depends on the site. So we're able to plot block by block how we're achieving the fragmentation. We usually focus on P80 as the goal. I didn't actually include that in here, which would have been a good thing to do. But we do see some drop-off, or I guess some increase in size distribution when we go from the production to the trim. It's what we expect. We're trying to go from broken rock to not broken rock. So somewhere in there, there's a gradation. And especially when we first made the changes, in some cases, the fragmentation was pretty poor. It was still mineable, but we got a lot of complaints from the crusher on how big the size was. So we had to step back, work on that a little bit. And generally, the trim shot size distribution is higher, but it's not that much higher. And we're starting to see that by controlling the overbreak from the production blast before, we're getting better fragmentation. And I think that's another talk that I might have to put together just to show that.
Thanks, Keith. How about a round of applause for Keith? I forgot to mention that we're going to have two presentations.